Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbus and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Dender, and shortly and during the show we'll be joined by our 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League and former Notts County man Dean Hennessy and our former ITN journo turned pundit Derek Dyson. And first up, what a historic result it was over there in Tokyo at the Olympics for the Aussie Roos. We expected them to be competitive, hoped they'd be competitive under Graham Arnold, but not only were they competitive, but they won, and they won 2-0 convincingly. Could have easily won 3-4 or even 5-0. To talk about that result, one of our favourite Socceroos resident in Australia, Scott McDonald, will join us. And then the night before, how about the Matildas? They finally broke the drought. Steph Branch from the ABC is going to jump on. Not quite the Titans that Argentina are, but the Football Ferns, ranked 22 in the world, took some beating, and the Matildas did just that. We'll continue the Olympic theme with Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquiry. When we booked Jonathan, we thought it might be to get his take on the Matildas' chances against the US juggernaut. That was until the Stars and Stripes were flogged by Sweden 3-0 in what, in hindsight, might not have been the giant killing upset after all. In the second hour, Willem will kick off with second edition news and more on the Matildas and Aussie Roos Olympic campaign. Then the Premier League and major European leagues are just 3 weeks away. We'll turn our attention back to Europe and look at one of last season's, what we think, overachievers, West Ham, who secured European contention on the final day of last season. Overachievers or on the verge of a new era under David Moyes? We'll talk to The Athletic's charismatic man on the Irons beat, Roshane Thomas. More on the latest transfer news and signings with Dino and Dell, and we'll wrap it up with stoppage time as we always do. Edge, did you expect that?
Well, football has kicked off the Olympic Games, and we've taken centre stage here in Australia. Two big primetime nights for Australian football, and as everybody in lockdown is looking to be entertained and thrilled by the Olympics, it's been our footballers that have done a fabulous job. Well done to the Matildas, who have had a difficult period to work through. They got us off with a beautiful win over New Zealand, but how good was that second goal? Marco Tilio.
I sat right in front of him doing his great work at the grand final. Remember, I said to you how fantastic he was. My mate Michael Alafaci from Storage King was saying the young Lewisham Christian Brothers boy was a star. Starred in the grand final, and Ferdinand, what a goal. What a poacher's goal.
No, but fantastic, and some really good performances from the Aussie Roos. That's obviously going to be the headlines, isn't it? The Matildas, you would expect, but to beat New Zealand 9 times out of 10, but maybe not the Aussie Roos against Argentina. So well done. This competition is alive. And let's not forget the women of the United States crashing to Sweden as well, and truly set this Olympic women's football tournament alive, hasn't it, Willem?
It has, Mike. We'll get to that in a minute. But for now, Arnie was right. How good is the group of dreams, the Aussie Roos? Off a 2-0 win over Argentina in Sapporo after a Lockie Wales tap-in and, as you mentioned, Marco Tilio belter. The Aussies benefited from a soft red card to Francisco Ortega, but had the better of general play and hit the woodwork multiple times. 6,186 days since the Aussie Roos last had an Olympics win, guys. Tim Cahill and John Aloisi on the score sheet that day, and they're now in the box seat to progress. Rob, you and I took in the Spain and Egypt clash prior to it, and both of those sides looked pretty lackluster in comparison to the Aussie Roos. The energy and the gusto and the positivity that they showed going forward would certainly assure that from here they should go on with the job.
Yeah, look, we did watch that match, and we were commenting that neither side, Spain, I mean, coming off the Euros, look, they had a pretty hectic tournament there and did better than most pundits expected them to, but these are young players, and we did certainly expect them to take to the young Pharaohs, especially without with Mo Salah out of the squad. So, you know, Egypt, to their credit, did have the better of most of that match. So Spain didn't show a lot. So, you know, the Aussie Roos, not only do they beat Argentina, but now they sit at top of the group, and the tournament is well and truly in their hands. I'm interested to talk to Scott about just, you know, what energy Arnie brings to a young squad who are not short of self-belief themselves, and they want to believe, and they want their manager to believe in them. Geez, they'll believe in themselves after this.
And before we get to the Matildas and the football Ferns, just to round out on our Trans-Tasman rivals, congrats to the New Zealand boys. They've won their first ever match at the Olympics, 1-0 winners over South Korea via a Chris Wood goal with 10 minutes to play. The Matildas have defeated New Zealand 2-1 in their opening match with Tamika Yallop and Sam Kerr on the score sheet. Both Australian goals came in the first half of a dominant display, which marked Tony Gustafsson's first win from six matches. And Michael, I thought the form and fitness in particular of Steph Catley and Kaya Simon, two players who have had significant injuries of recent times. And for Simon, maybe a few riding her off at international level was a real positive. And the other big notable point out of it is that Mary Fowler finally has earned her first competitive cap and is now tied to the Matildas going forward.
Yeah, we can stop talking about her playing for Ireland now, can't we? Because that was long overdue in many people's minds, including mine. But fantastic effort by the Matildas. Yes, I'm still apprehensive heading into the matches against Sweden and the USA based on our form line, but it was much better. That the formation that he played was interesting, a big departure from that of Stojic and Miletic. That era seems to well and truly be over now. So we look forward to a different formation, the players playing in different roles, and it was exciting at times, but we'll see how we go against the big guns in the next week.
Staying at the Olympics, the USA's women's team's 44-game unbeaten run has been snapped, going down 3-0 to Sweden. Notably, Sweden were the side that also knocked the States out of the Rio Games 5 years ago. At that point, they were in pursuit of their fourth straight gold medal. So a few demons now against the Swedes for the United States. The next round of matches in that group will take place on Saturday, with Sweden to play Australia and the US to face New Zealand. Michael, before we get to Jonathan Tannenwald, we of course know Sweden are a very serious side in the women's game, but 3-0, don't think anyone expected that.
No, that's a big shock. And the American football community, which we know loves their national team, they'll be smarting. 44 games in a row they've had without a loss. So that'll be big news in the States. And little old the Kiwis, the football Ferns, they cop them on the rebound. So imagine what's likely to happen there. I'm expecting a big response from the United States of America. They are still, for me, the firm favourites of this competition. How could they not be? And I'm expecting them to do a job on New Zealand in quite a big way.
Heading over to the UK, a police officer on duty at the Euros final at Wembley has told the Times senior officers refused to intervene over fears of brand image. Speaking anonymously, the officer said those in charge were hesitant to get robust with those that needed it, while also calling stadium security useless. A Times investigation has revealed at least 9 disabled entrances were breached by fans or people trying to enter the ground, whether you can call them fans or not, with the Football Association and Met Police to now undertake separate inquiries. And Rob, rumours of corruption and bribes continue to swirl around this story, which still has a little way to play out.
Yeah, it sure does. We'll ask Roisin Thomas a little bit about that to put a full stop on it from the point of view of the Euros. But look, the only good thing to come out of this is that it's in a country that that takes these sorts of things seriously in the investigation stakes. So they were putting out mugshots. They're trawling through CCTV footage. They are literally committed now to overturning, at least making up for some of the embarrassment that the Metropolitan Police, that the FA, that Wembley Stadium, the government caused by not being prepared for, you know, what should have been foreseen, given that the jibbing story had been there on social media in the weeks leading up to it, and they knew that there were 25,000 empty seats that these clowns wanted to claim for their own. So at least we're starting to see some of these voices come out. All right, Willem, well done. It's a great start to the show. It's going to be a busy opening hour. We're going to talk to Scott McDonald next, one of our favourite Socceroos. He wasn't prolific on the score sheet when the green and gold, but he just scored for fun in his club career. But he just loves the Socceroos, and he will be very excited about the result against Argentina. Stick around. That's next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving, and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And as we set off the show, what an exciting time it is for Australia as we're going to where we are reporting that historic moment in Australian football at the Olympics. The Australian Ollie Roos have beaten Argentina 2-0. And to discuss it, to go back through the game, is one of our favourite Socceroos himself, played 26 times for the national side. Scott McDonald, how are you, Scott?
Good evening. A very good one at that as well.
Well, it's just amazing. Whenever you play Argentina in football, and we're little old Australia, we don't have major expectations, but we do have a proud history against Argentina. We have some incredible results over time, and this goes right to the top shelf, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful result first and foremost, but the performance was excellent as well. You know, let's not forget about that. Yes, I'd have to say that the red card was ridiculous for Argentina and probably changed the complexities of it a little bit in our favour. But I thought the boys were excellent from the very beginning. You know, how positive we were even from the first minute. Daniel Arzani making that real positive run into the box. You know, I thought he was really impressive. But the man for me in of the match was Nathaniel Atkinson. He was everywhere. Both fullbacks were wonderful, and you could keep going on about the praise of every single player that was out there. But Nathaniel Atkinson, for me, if he has another performance or two like that, I don't think he'll be hanging around Melbourne City too long. There'll be a lot of admirers for sure.
And he's really come on, hasn't he, Scotty? He the last 6 or 7 weeks of the A-League season, people forget that he was off on his way to Perth, and then he was brought back. So he had a bit of a rocky time at Melbourne City, but his last 6 or 7 matches in the A-League were fabulous, and he's just taken that form into tonight's match, hasn't he?
Well, he really has, and it's not an easy thing for a young player to do that, coming off a serious injury that he had. You know, that was a serious hamstring injury that he got, building into the last, run-in of the A-League there, and to come back and get fit, no one really expected it. Then to put on the performances he did, and even his performances up until he got injured were starting to really come on leaps and bounds and finding his feet, and that, right back or even left back, he's quite flexible in where he can play. But I've just been really impressed by his maturity and how much he's come on for sure. And I think he's certainly going to be a very, very bright spark and a big future for Australia and for him at club level also.
And who would have thought that that a result like this with the earlier match against where Egypt managed to hold Spain nil all would leave Australia on top of the group? So, I mean, we go back to 1992 where the famous Ollie Roos under Eddie Thompson back then played off in the bronze medal match. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but this certainly puts us in the box seat for a serious knockout position.
Well, absolutely it does, And, for Graham Arnold, he got his team selection spot on. I think tactically they were excellent tonight. And, when you're in, tournaments like this, it's always so important to get off to a very, very good start. If you can get all 3 points, you're halfway there, more or less. You know, even a point possibly could be enough now to take the Ollie Roos through to the next stages of the competition itself. I think before the tournament started, everyone was a little bit, I wouldn't say totally negative about the chances, but being in a group with, the likes of Spain and Argentina, it's not easy, So for them to get that 3 points now, it will give the boys a world of confidence. And yes, you could probably say on another night, they could have had a few more. Ryan McCree's couple of efforts were superb as well. And Lockie Wales, we've not even talked about Lockie Wales. Lockie Wales
could have had a hat-trick.
He could have, but he wasn't even in the original squad to go to the Olympics, until they extended that squad. And he finds himself with these performances. He's got there. He's earned the right to get in that first 11, and he's popped up with that first goal. So I think it's a wonderful story in itself as well. And I think, like I talked about Nathaniel Atkinson, Joel King was excellent as well. The two fullbacks were key in any success that, the Ollie Roos had going forward tonight. They could have had plenty more.
This is Box to Box. We're talking to Scott McDonald, former Socceroos Scott McDonald, about the famous victory for the Ollie Roos against Argentina at the Tokyo Olympics.
Scott, you mentioned that we are now in the box seat, heading into the tournament. It probably wouldn't have appeared within the group that we would have been a chance in this position. You mentioned that it will now give them a world of confidence. You think that's what it will do? There won't be any sort of second doubts that now they're in this position, they might let it slip? You reckon that it will give them confidence to go forward?
No, absolutely. I think they'll grow in belief for this. Graham Arnold's, I know Arnie firsthand, he'll make sure that the players are well and truly feet are on the ground still. a lot of hard work to be done. You know, it's very important now that they, you know, get really good recovery back into them. You know, it looked really hot out there tonight. So they'll be just focusing on that, getting the good recovery in and getting ready for the next fixture. And, you know, trying to, you know, get maximum points again to get them into what a story that'd be to get, you know, the maximum points and get into the next round before they play even the third game and sort of maybe give some other players, you know, a game. But I'm getting too far ahead of myself here. So it's, you know, it's just important, obviously, that they get ready for the next one, their focus, which they will be. And, you know, not even to mention, you know, majority of that team's a, you know, an A-League team that are playing for the Oli Roos. So when we look at that, that's a real plus point for, you know, the league itself as well over here.
And talk to us about Arnie, Scott. You know him well, as you say. And talk to us about him as a manager of young players. Willem talked about, you know, that ethereal confidence that comes from winning. And Arnie, like you mentioned, that no one predicted us except Arnie. He didn't call it the group of death. He called it the group of dreams. So there's something that young people can build from opportunities like this. And with a positive, enthusiastic manager who's not hard bitten and grizzled, special things can happen, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's got a real knack. He's very endearing character, Arnie is. And over the years, we've got to remember, you know, he's been in and out of national team setups now for well and truly, you know, 20, 25 years. So he knows the international scene very, very well. You know, he managed to finally get his opportunity to be the national team manager. And, you know, his success in the A-League. He knows a lot of the players as well. And just the way he talks to the players, he gives them confidence. It's not his job necessarily to teach them new things when they get there as a national team manager. A lot of the instructions will be simple. And tactically, he knows his stuff. And players now are there and they're all at that level to be able to understand tactically what's required. But he has a real way of galvanizing a group and allowing them to enjoy themselves as well while they're in these environments. And I think that's hugely important as well, that when you're in these environments, that it's not always so tense and intense. There is times when there has to be that a little bit more enlightening mood and relaxed. And I think Arnie can really get that balance right within his squads. And that's why he can bring success.
Yeah, you're a well-renowned striker, Scott. Tell us about Marco Tilio's goal and... He just, his eyes lit up. Mitch Duke did a little bit of hard work for him and laid it off beautifully. But what a strike. I mean, that goes down, that'll go down in the highlight reels for many years to come when they talk about the Oli Roos at the Olympic Games.
Absolutely. It was the icing on the cake. And I think everyone breathed a sigh of relief when that one went in so late as well, because, you know, the game gets later on. You end up just getting sucked further and further back the park, you know, play, even against 10 men. So, you know, for Marco Tilio to come on and he's burst onto the scene, you know, the back end of the A-League season, had a wonderful grand final. And again, another bright future for a young player. And to have someone coming on off the bench and scoring, making an impact like that's another big plus point. And it will galvanize and bring the camaraderie together even more as well when you have that. When you see players coming off the bench, giving their all and actually having an influence and an impact on the game, that helps the team massively. Trust me, guys, you know, because when you're not playing, you are disappointed. But it's important that you use that energy in the right way. And certainly, you know, Marco Tilio doing that and the others that came off the bench tonight, it shows you that there's a real good team spirit. Because I think a lot of people probably questioned as well, Arnie not taking a few more senior players to this tournament. You know, I think he only chose Mitch Duke as the one out. Now, I know he had a couple others that were meant to come, didn't come in the end. But even then, it wasn't probably the pick of the bunch that everyone would have expected. But it seems to have worked, you know, in terms of the balance of the squad and the camaraderie that they do have. So So far, so good.
It sure is. And one of the intangibles that we all know is that, you know, in these COVID Olympics in Tokyo with no fans in the stadium, that the team spirit and harmony and the ability to galvanise and focus on the job at hand without fans in the stadium is going to be key. You've played a lot of games in the domestic league in similar circumstances. That's a pretty important element, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, exactly. And look, from what I can gather and from what I've seen thus far, the restrictions that they're living upon are very, very strict right now in terms of all the COVID safety rules. So that's very difficult within itself, living in that type of hub environment. It can bring you a lot closer together as well. But like we touched on with Arnie earlier, I think, you know, having a manager like that, that can, you know, enlighten the mood and relax it as well. I think that will only help the players as well while they're in that environment.
Sure will, Scott. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us as we speak to you. It's not long after the final whistle of the game. We're all pretty excited about it coming off the back of the Matildas' victory against New Zealand. It's a good start all round for Australian football, and hopefully it only gets better.
Absolutely, guys. Fingers crossed for a bit more of this. Nice
Absolutely. Talking to you tonight. Thank you, Scott McDonald, the soccer favourite, talking about the famous victory of the Olivers against Argentina. All right, stick around. We're going to talk to Stephanie Brantz next. We had a great result the night before, didn't we, against the Football Ferns. The Matildas had been out of form, spluttering like a Ferrari with a banana up the tailpipe, but Sam Kerr managed to spit it out and he got the result. So hopefully...
Did you say like a Ferrari with a banana up its tailpipe?
Exactly, just like Eddie Murphy from Beverly Hills Cop, if you remember that show. All right, stick around. Steph Brantz next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial.
Yes, this is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. And it's exciting times for Australian football at the Olympics. We talked before the break to Scott McDonald about the famous victory of the Olivers against Argentina in their opening match. But look, not quite as big a opposition on the world stage in New Zealand, but certainly the Trans-Tasman rivals in any sport are not to be tossed, and it ranked 22 in the world. And with the sort of form that the Matildas came into the tournament with, it's not to be sneezed at. And to discuss it with us on the show, Stephanie Brantz. Welcome back to Box, Steph.
Thanks, guys. Good to chat to you.
Yeah, and under the circumstances, all the better, because I think we're all pretty nervous after what we saw with Tony Gustafsson's early. I mean, when you're happy about a nil-all draw as your final warm-up match or your second final warm-up match, you are struggling. So to get that result, to see Sam Kerr on the scoreboard was just a big relief.
Yeah, I think a relief for Sam, especially to get the monkey off her back after five matches without scoring. I think also for the Matildas to actually get a win, they strung pretty much about 70, 80 minutes of pretty decent football together. As you said, we do have to remember who the opposition was, and I think Tom Samani of any coach would have known how to line up the Football Ferns against the Australians, having coached them before, knowing so many of them so well. He did a pretty good job with a New Zealand side that has played 90 minutes of competitive football in 498 days. So I don't think we should underestimate how underdone our opposition were. But quite frankly, had we not beaten New Zealand, then we would have stood no chance at all in this Group G with USA and Sweden and an angry USA still to come.
Well, there is a lot to reflect on the game, Steph. And the first port of call about the team is just the formation of the lineup. There were hints in some of the leading games of the type of approach that he would take, but three at the back, Polkinghorne effectively playing as a sweeper, the wide players getting forward. They definitely played in channels. But what did you think of the setup of the team? Because it is a big departure from the Stajic Miletic era.
Yeah, it certainly is. But the way I saw that game is through the lens of against New Zealand, they could do that. I think we'll get punished playing teams that are tougher in attack and are more clinical up front. We'll get punished playing three at the back. So I think that it was the right decision, and clearly it was. In 2020 hindsight, we can say that it was absolutely the right decision. However, given a couple of fumbles from usually rock-solid custodian Lydia Williams, I think we need a little bit more support in the back line. I thought when Liz went wandering out to the edge of her area and Hannah Wilkinson inexplicably crossed for a teammate rather than going herself, that could have been a game changer had New Zealand actually buried that ball in the back of the net. Fortuitously for Australia, that they didn't. And I thought we saw finally again what the pace of a Steph Catley on the left and Ellie Carpenter on the right can actually do to punish other teams on the counter. The problem is leaving us exposed at the back, I think, will be dangerous. And as much as I love Claire Polkinghorne, I don't think leaving her on her own there to play sweeper is going to be effective against the likes of, well, certainly the USA, should they bounce back from that loss to Sweden. But having had a brief glimpse at how clinical Sweden are looking, they're nothing like the Sweden that we had a nil or draw with a couple of weeks ago. they are looking very, very dangerous.
Yeah. No, they are. But you mentioned Lydia Williams. There's something inside of me says that the decision to play Lydia over Tegan would have been very, very close. I think she's just hanging on to that number one position. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would. And that's really funny you should mention that, because I've said for years that it's Lydia than daylight. Tegan Micah has had a wonderful sort of passage through from the, I guess you'd call it the fringes of this team. I remember chatting to her in France, and she was still finishing her degree at UCLA, and she was doing exams sitting in the foyer of the hotel. And it was quite funny to chat to someone that was just so excited to be in and around the team, because, gents, as you know, when you're a keeper, you're either in or you're just not playing. So it's not like you're sitting on the bench thinking, oh, I'm gonna get a shot in the last 10 minutes. You know that you've got to fight for that spot. But in the last season, so sort of let's say 8, 9, 10 months, is the first time where I've kind of looked at Lids and thought, oh, you're going to have to fight to keep your spot. Because of course Mackenzie Arnold has had a good run as well, but Tegan Micah has been coming through. She played really well in the warm-up matches, and Lids made some really odd errors for someone that's so experienced. And I fancy that Tony Gustavsson selected Lydia Williams because of her experience. So that's why she actually got the first start. I don't think Tegan Micah had done much wrong in the lead up to that. So I just wonder whether there's now a bit of pressure on Lids. A couple of errors, and Australia were at all sorts when New Zealand scored that goal. And I thought perhaps if the match had gone another 10 minutes, we might have been in real trouble.
Yeah, look towards the end there. Fortunately, even Mary Fowler's final minute on the ball, the composure that she showed as a young woman to just ensure that there wasn't the dreaded equaliser late. It would have been a disaster, wouldn't it? But look, you make the point that New Zealand are nowhere near the stature of Sweden in the international game. It's a great result. It's 3 points. It's nice to see the US national women's side, sitting at the bottom of the ladder from our point of view. But 5:30 Saturday afternoon, it's going to be a massive task. It's as you say, not the team that we had the nil all draw against. But confidence breeds confidence, and we still do have some of the best players in the world. And Sam Kerr, if she starts playing like she did for Chelsea during the season, then you wouldn't want to be playing against her.
No, absolutely. I think the one difference between Sam Kerr playing in her national team and playing for Chelsea is look at the service that she gets at Chelsea. And you can't put that together in a national team. You'd have to be extremely lucky to have a side that had those sorts of wingers and a couple of interchangeable strikers the way that Chelsea does. And Emma Hayes has put together a fantastic team there. Caitlin Ford, though, for her club side, has been playing that role really well with Vivian Miedema of the Netherlands. So if she can hook up with Sam, and we saw shades of that in that match. I thought Caitlin and Sam linked up much better than they had in some time, certainly for the Matildas. Ellie Carpenter, I think, has been one of the standouts. She has been solid since she came back. And she returned for the Denmark game, if you recall, for the Netherlands and Germany, where we got walloped with 10 goals conceded in those two matches. Ellie actually had COVID, so she was left back in Germany after, I think, her entire Lyon team actually got COVID, so they couldn't travel. When she came into the team, there was a definite uptick in the energy at the back and the mobility and the communication. And I think she will probably be the difference, more so than what happens up front. But it's that getting that service to Sam. And now that she scored, we saw in France at the World Cup what a difference it made when she scored those four goals, and the confidence in her game that, you know, it made a difference to her performance, which you think maybe it wouldn't at that level. But I think for Sam, it just takes some of the pressure off. And now they have nothing to lose. The Swedish team, I think, not only shocked perhaps the whole world who was watching on, but certainly the US team. What I'm worried about now is the Swedes come in with momentum and the US know they need to win. And that's kind of not the scenario we were hoping for. I think the one thing I'm really concerned about is I hope that that conceded goal against New Zealand isn't what comes back to bite us.
Yeah, I think that's everyone's thinking that. Steph, I know we're looking towards the 2023 Women's World Cup and the selections of Fowler and Cooney Cross and even Courtney Nevin and Charlie Grant looking, you know, they're definitely, you know, we're looking to the future with those selections. Mm. But I couldn't help notice Marta scoring two goals in a big win over China. I couldn't help notice that Carly Lloyd has figured heavily in America's preparatory games, and she'll probably get some time. So I couldn't help think, I know we can't fit everyone in, but has the Federation erred by not taking Lisa Devanna?
Do you know what? I think Lisa Devanna always has something to offer, and I would have thought it was completely justified had she been included in this side. What I think perhaps the coaching collective was looking at is not so much at the Olympics, but they're looking at getting a group of women together who can play all the way through to 2023. And Lisa, I think, was highly unlikely to perhaps even have wanted to play through to 2023. So they were looking to get those youngsters through. I think if Lisa Devanna was a defender, hands down, she would have been in Tokyo, because that was the end of the park where we were struggling to find really formed players. Unfortunately, we are so blessed in the final third that it's really tough. Who would you have left out? I think that's more the question. Now, with the extended squad, perhaps if Lisa had been over at the camp in Scandinavia, that would have been a justifiable outcome. It would have seen her get the cap that equalised her with Cheryl Salisbury for most appearances. And I think there would have been some lovely little side notes and different backstories from that particular selection. Certainly, Carly Lloyd is still playing at the top of her game. Marta is still playing for Orlando Pride. And as we've seen for Brazil, still an unbelievable talent. I think they're probably in a slightly different class now. But, if Lisa Devanna had been selected, I wouldn't have sort of blinked twice. She had an outstanding season in the W League and potentially deserved a look in. Perhaps in a non-COVID year, that might have happened. But, yeah, kudos to Carly and to Marta. And a nod to our own Ivy Luick, who, you know, at a similar sort of age, is still killing it in the midfield. She was fantastic.
Yeah, she was on the outer for a long, long time, and now she's a starting player and a key player in the Matildas lineup.
Yeah, it's amazing. After all this time, never been to an Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Steph, thank you so much for joining us. You analyse the Matildas with a passion that reflects the feeling of the national consciousness towards this great side. We really hope now that they've had that win that they can turn the corner and we can see them finally claim that podium finish that we've craved for so long.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Thanks for the chat, guys. I've got to say that I feel more kind of abject relief than triumph for that particular performance. But yes. Look forward to chatting to you, hopefully much deeper in the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. We will certainly do that as we get to the knockout stages. Steph Branch, thank you very much for joining us from the ABC. All right, stick around after the break. We're going to go over the States. We're going to talk to Jonathan Tannenwald. We talked about the women's side, the United States national women's side. Well, he's going to tell us exactly what the reaction is over there stateside. After the break on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
for Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. And yeah, we've covered plenty of Matildas and Ollie Roos. And when we lined up our next guest, Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquirer, we had expecting to be talking about the all-conquering United States women's soccer team and the retirees that we're planning to see. But after the Sweden result, it's all gone a little bit pear-shaped. Welcome back to the show, Jonathan. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well, thank you. It has indeed gone quite a bit pear-shaped. You know, it's one thing, we all figured they might lose a game here or there sooner or later, but they really got beat by Sweden. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, and look, there's of course a famous history of teams losing their opening match. We saw Spain do it in the South Africa World Cup. I mean, the women's team, the United States women's team, have done it before. Lost to Norway, I think it was in 08, and then went on 1-5 in a row, won the gold medal. So it's not all over just yet, but just a bit of a shock.
Yeah, it's not all over just yet. There's a lot of latitude, especially because you have third place teams advancing out of this funky tournament. I think it's a strange tournament, we can call it that. It always has been. I'd be perfectly happy if it went up to 16 teams at some point, because it would just make things a little cleaner, a little more direct, you know. But there's a lot of latitude, and I'm sure that, you know, obviously we all know how many fans the U.S. women's team has over here. I'm sure the biggest were in New Zealand's camp yesterday, hoping that the U.S. would win and be a little comfortable going into Saturday. Now the U.S. is going to be really angry, and Tom Sarmani knows
he sure
what that's
does,
like.
And obviously Vlatko Andonovski's first loss after taking over the helm from Jill Ellis, it was inevitably going to happen. But you know, he didn't miss when he came out in the press afterwards. I mean, he wasn't harsh, but he certainly was. Whilst wanting to give credit to Sweden, he did go pretty hard at his own team. I think Julie Foudy on the NBC, the former US star, referred to the team as lethargic and sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, look, the criticism is what not just obviously the fans like to hear it, but it's what the players want to hear. They want to have it come at them directly. You know, they know what happened. They know all the flaws from yesterday. I think the big ones were, you know, the defense was not good enough. We talk all the time about the program's attacking stars, Alex Morgan, Tobin Heath, etc. But they really won those two World Cups with their defending. And the defending yesterday was not good enough. There were some major breakdowns on all the goals. The other thing was, because I'm not in Tokyo, I don't have access to all of the accreditation and the news conferences and so on. But I think Vlatko Andonovski knows himself that he did a couple things yesterday that raised some eyebrows. One was taking off, and it was one thing to make some halftime substitutions to send in Julie Ertz, but to take off Sam Mewis instead of Lindsey Horan, I think was a little bit questionable. And also not having Lynn Williams on the bench, I think was a little bit questionable. They could have used her yesterday, her speed and directness.
Yes, exactly. This is Box to Box. We're talking to Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquirer about the U.S. national women's soccer team. Unexpected loss against Sweden, who won the silver medal, of course, at the last Olympics. And they're not a team of duffers themselves. They certainly know all about performing at the top level, and they've done so plenty of times before.
I got to be totally honest with you. The call dropped. So I missed half the question.
No, that's okay. Jonathan, I just, what's been the reaction in the football community to the result? I mean, it was a shock. I don't think anybody would have had America just, you know, unbackable favourites. If you were running a book on this, having a betting market, you would have America at $1.10 starting this tournament. So what has there been shock amongst the football community in America that this result transpired? Has there been any outpouring?
Oh, yeah.
Has there been anger? Yeah. I mean, what's been the response?
Well, there's anger whenever this team plays, you know, because everybody either loves them or hates them, and that's before you get into the politics, you know? But look, now I think there was a lot. There's probably, to be honest with you, there might have been a little more shock than there should have been. Sweden's the number 5 team in the world. They're very good. And they're not just a team that plays a lot of defense the way the perception of them used to be.
I looked at that front six yesterday that they played. That's a lot of attacking firepower that they brought. They are a really good team. I think the thing that I found sort of the most resonant is that game was played at 4:30 in the morning, U.S. Eastern time, New York, Philadelphia, et cetera. 1:30 in the morning, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, et cetera. And you can do the math on the two time zones in the middle. And a whole lot of people woke up early in the morning to watch the game. Just an enormous number of people who were on social media and so on. And that tells you how big a deal this team is, because in normal circumstances, nobody's waking up in that hour in the middle of the summer. We're all sleeping in, you know? So they're obviously a big deal. I reminded everybody of that again yesterday. And I think now the questions going forward are obviously, you know, are they going to beat New Zealand on Saturday? Can Australia beat Sweden, which would really throw this group into chaos and open the door for the U.S. to potentially win it? And then what happens in that U.S.-Australia game? Because the Matildas and the Americans know each other so well, it's a chance for Australia to make a statement. It's a chance for the U.S., you know, to finish second or higher in the group. And then somebody's got to play Brazil or the Netherlands in the quarterfinals. And I suppose with that, you got to play them sooner or later. You know,
Jonathan, recently we had Samantha Johnson on the program, who obviously played in the NWSL, and she plays out here in the W League. She's a former national representative at junior level, but she was talking about the significance of the Olympic Games and the fact that the tournament is compromised. Only four teams from the Four out of the 12 teams will be eliminated after the group phase. There's so many good teams from Europe not playing in the event that in many ways it's a compromised tournament. Do you think that sort of commentary that I know exists in America quite a lot, does that have any role to play in the players not sort of being totally switched on for this event? Unlike just the rabid, just how they were prepared for the World Cup, but it's very, very different.
I mean, the commentary is correct. I agree with all of it. I don't think it has anything to do with the state of the players' minds. I think that they've been very fired up for this tournament. And the reason why they've been fired up is not just because they want to win every game. It's because they're trying to become the first reigning World Cup champion to win the following Olympic gold. If that had already been done, I think that the U.S. program would be treating these Olympics very differently than they are. I don't think we'd see as many veterans. We'd see a lot more younger players. They'd use it much more as a stepping stone towards 23. Obviously, they want to win every game they play, every tournament they play. And as with Australia and a number of other countries, the Olympics are a big deal here. They're not as big a deal in some other parts of the world as we know in the way the World Cup is. But I think that, as I said, if they had already done that World Cup Olympics double, maybe they'd be treating this tournament a little differently. But I think that because they haven't and because they're trying to get it done now, that's a big part of their mindset.
Jonathan, you talked about some of the veterans. I want to draw a parallel between Carly Lloyd and our own Lisa Devanna, who's not at the Olympic Games, not selected. Carly Lloyd, 39 years of age, 306 games, 7 major tournaments. Lisa Devanna, 36 years old, our leading games record holder and also all-time highest goal scorer. Lisa Devanna's been pretty unceremoniously left out of this squad. A lot of the football community in Australia are a little surprised, still think that she has a role to play in the Matildas team. And we sort of draw the parallel to the resurgence of Carly Lloyd and how much she's figured in the warm-up fixtures to this. And do you think Carly Lloyd will have an impact in this tournament, or is she there as a bit of a thank you for the service that she's provided to the U.S. program over so many years?
You can't bet against her, I don't think. She's in great fitness form. She's been scoring some goals lately. She's including at times me, and I've known her for a long time.
And, you know, I think one of the things when I look at this Australia team and I look at how young it is, one of the things I ask myself, you know, we mentioned a moment ago, is the U.S. Why is the U.S. playing so much for this tournament? Well, is Australia playing so much for this tournament, or are they starting to get players ready for 23 on? So that's the really big one. I don't claim to know the answer, but I figure you guys might.
Thank you, Jonathan Tanimal from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Great chat there. Maybe we'll be talking to him next when the Matildas and the Stars and Stripes play off for the gold medal. That'd be hope against hope, wouldn't it? All right, stick around. A big hour coming up next on the show. We've got to talk to Roshane Thomas from The Athletic about West Ham, who had a great season last year. Dino and Dell, and we'll wrap it up with stoppage time.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbus and Michael Edgley.
Oh!
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and
absolutely fantastic!
Yes, welcome back to Box, second edition news with Willem van Dander, and shortly The Athletic's man on the West Ham beat, Roshane Thomas. More European news, talking transfers with the boys, Dino and Dell, and we'll wrap it up with stoppage time. But Willem, you got more news on a busy, busy news day.
I know, Rob. Socceroos and Matildas central for the Green and Gold Army to start, of course. It won't be long now until the Socceroos World Cup qualifying campaign really starts to ramp up. To be among the first to know about overseas tour information, sign up to the Green and Gold Army's mailing list. You know where to do so by now, ggatravel.com.au. Now, with our Matildas and Ollie Roos at the Olympics, not a lot of action in club land for players around the world, so I thought I'd turn this into a bit of a manager central tonight. And the big story, of course, this week is Ange Postecoglou and Celtic. His first competitive fixture was good, but it could have been better. The boys drew 1-1 with Michelin in the first leg of their Champions League qualifier. Celtic were the better side at home, but went down to 10 men following a brain fade from one of their more experienced players near Breton. They went down to 10 men. He was sent off. Second leg is on Thursday morning, and if they advance, they'll play PSV Eindhoven. If they win that tie, they're into the group stages. Michael, plenty of press on Postecoglou at Celtic. He's been pretty frustrated and pretty verbal about it this week, given the slow nature of their transfer dealings, but they have signed Kyogo Furuhashi and Christopher Aya. How do you think that he went in their first match with him, and what chance do you give them of progressing to the Champions League proper?
I think it's going to be difficult. He did apologise to the fans for not signing the players or getting the players that they'd signed into the lineup because of various issues around quarantining and transfers. So he did say that the team wouldn't be as unprepared for this match as in any future games. He was very much on the back foot, but they did very well. I thought they played very well with a very young team. They had a 19-year-old striker, an 18-year-old centre-back. They were able to get up one goal to the good, and then obviously the send-off happened, and that changed the game quite a bit. So ultimately for Ange, it's his first game at home out of the way. He's now got to go across to Copenhagen and see if they can get the job done over there. Whether they get through or not, I think it's neither here nor there. I think it's a bit of a longer-term project for Ange Postecoglou, but we will wait with bated breath to see what happens on that front.
Over to Japan, Ange's old stomping ground, of course, and one of his disciples, if you like, Pete Klimovsky's remarkable run with Montedeo Yamagata has continued. He's 10 league matches in now with his new club. They've had 9 wins and a draw, still unbeaten. They were 6th after 23 games when he joined and were hoping just to avoid relegation, but they're now 6 points off top spot. And staying in Japan this week, we've had the confirmation we were waiting for. Kevin Muscat will be the new manager of Yokohama F Marinos. Their next match is against Gamba Osaka on August the 6th. I know we talked a lot of Olympics in the first hour, guys, but there was another match I wanted to round off on before we move on. The Netherlands and Zambia, their women's sides both qualified for the Olympics for the first time in Tokyo, and they played their first matches against each other, and they won't be forgetting about it in a hurry. The Netherlands ran out 10-3 winners. Yes, 10-3 over Zambia in Rifu. Arsenal's Vivian Miedema scored 4 for Holland, but she might not have even been the best story of the match, with 21-year-old Barbara Banda scoring all 3 goals for the Copper Queens. In the group's other match, Brazil defeated China 5-0, with Marta becoming the first player to score at 5 straight Olympics, and Formiga appearing at her 7th games. Just a couple of players to round off there, Michael and Rob. Firstly, to you, Michael, on Marta, 111 goals, 12 at the Olympics, and she's only 2 behind her countrywoman, Christiane, for the record, and you'd expect her to go past that at this Games.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous achievement by Marta. She is a superstar, and Now I think she's scored at 5 Olympic Games, which is the best outcome for any player, male or female, at the Olympics. Pretty good. What about France in the men's team, Willem? They went down to Ivory Coast 4-1 in their opening game. And it's a little bit to be said about this in relation to the how the French Federation has got themselves organised. Effectively, the league, they're all League Two players. Every Ligue 1 club has banned their under 23 players from participating at the Olympic Games. And the French Federation had to get a had to go to FIFA to get a waiver after it could not assemble a roster of 18 players and plus its 4 alternates from the required provisional shortlist of 50 players it submitted 2 months ago. So, and that's only the beginning. When he named his squad 21 players, only 19 of them he's been able to take to Japan. That's the coach whose name is Sylvain Ripoli. Well, that played out, didn't it? Because they got resoundingly beaten. And just sort of another nail in the coffin for Olympic football. It's just disappointing that these sort of things transpire with them.
And Rob, for France themselves, it's funny how football works. A month ago, we were sitting here with France, the odds-on favourites to add a European Championship to their World Cup. That obviously fizzled out in the early knockout rounds. Now their Olympic campaign's in disarray. It can be a funny old game and turn on you quickly.
Yeah, exactly. But look, I just take an alternate view. I mean, football is the world game, and it's the sport that that is followed most in every single country around the world. I think it's got to be in the Olympics in some fashion or another. And if countries like France choose to disrespect it, then it embarrasses them. And the teams that ultimately stand on the top of the podium and get a gold medal put around their neck, they'll never forget it. So, look, it's a once every 4-year tournament. In this case, every 5 years. So you know, I just say, look, every country's had the chance to be there. If they choose to be there and play a second-rate team, then that's it's on them, and they get embarrassed accordingly.
And just a round out on the Olympic chat there, Formiga, the Brazilian midfielder, debuted in 1995, age 17. 201 caps later, she's still doing the job for Brazil. Played at the Atlanta Olympics. That was her first time out. She's now 43. Moving on to a concerning story in the Premier League this week. Everton have suspended a first-team player as he undergoes police investigation on suspicion of child sex offences. While the club and British press have not named the player, multiple Icelandic outlets have reported the man concerned is Gylfi Sigurdsson. Greater Manchester Police have confirmed items were confiscated during a search at the home of a 31-year-old man's house. Beyond here, this is the worst of the worst, really, guys, and until the legal proceedings play out, there's not much we can say, but there has been drama at Everton, Rob, with Fabian Delph, a player at Everton, the only other 31-year-old on the squad, so he wasn't happy that the club released that information about the case.
Yeah, no, look, it was unfortunate on so many levels. I mean, as you say, Icelandic press are reporting widely the name of the player, and British press, for their own legal requirements, are unable to do so. But, you know, whenever these sorts of things happen, it leaves a pall over every other player. And we're quick to point out that, you know, there's been no proven case as yet. If the player concerned is proven to have been guilty, then he'll face the full weight of the law. But yeah, there's always another story to these issues when they come out, where the whole halo of who is it is cast upon every player in the squad.
And a final one for me, guys. This weekend, we'll see the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Gold Cup, with the 5 most successful nations in the region still in contention. Sunday morning, we'll see, okay, oh, granted, these first two are not powerhouses of the region, Qatar. They'll take on El Salvador in Phoenix, before 11-time winners Mexico take on 1981 champions Honduras at the same venue. The second two matches will be played the following day in Dallas. We'll have Costa Rica playing Canada, and then the USA to play the Reggae Boys of Jamaica. It's all getting interesting and tasty in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Rob, back to you.
Exactly, it sure is. Well, I'm all right. Well done. Well, after the break, we're going to talk to West Ham's, the man on the Athletic beat from West Ham, Roshane Thomas. Had a wonderful season under David Moyes last year, finished sixth, and they'll play in the Europa Cup. Will they do as well this season? We'll wait till we hear what Roshane finds out. Well, Roshane tells us next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving, and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Yes, this is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport, and we are delighted to be joined by our next guest, Roshane Thomas from The Athletic. Last year, West Ham, whose beat he covers, had a mighty season under David Moyes. They finished sixth, and they're playing in Europe. And Roshane, we welcome you back to the show. How are you, mate?
I'm all good. Yourself?
Yeah, we're really well. And look, West Ham, last time we spoke to you, were threatening to take one of the European spots, but in the end managed to get a hold of it. It was a mighty season.
Oh, incredible season. And I know West Ham finished sixth, but definitely could have finished fourth had it not been for Declan Rice's injury while on international duty. You know, if West Ham got Champions League, oh my goodness, a lot of us would have been absolutely going crazy. But listen, Europa League is still a great achievement. And it just shows how far the club have come under David Moyes. Bearing in mind, the season prior, just about stayed up. So from just about staying up to challenging for Champions League for large parts of the season, then getting Europa League, just an incredible, incredible season. And not just that, but players like Fornals doing well under Moyes, Declan Rice doing well, Aaron Cresswell, 8 assists, the most by a West Ham player last season, Fabianski doing well, plus Moyes giving young players a chance. Yeah, it's definitely a feel-good factor now at West Ham, and yeah, fans are excited again.
Roshane, how do you feel the expectations are amongst the West Ham fans and even yourself this season? You know, was last season a overachievement, or do you think that they're looking to solidify their place in the top six?
Oh, Derek, I feel offended. Overachievement. I feel offended, pal. Now, all jokes aside, listen, from what I hear Moyes on a weekly basis in the press conferences, he said this team is good enough to be challenging for the higher reaches, the top four, the top six on a regular basis. There's no reason why West Ham can't do that. The days of West Ham just about staying up are long gone when Moyes in charge. But that's what he's been on the mindset of saying in a press conference on a weekly basis. And I believe that based on what I've been seeing from this team and the players I mentioned of doing well. I thought that last season was great. My only thing with this season is it will be tough because that Thursday Sunday schedule is absolutely brutal. It really is. We've seen Wolves and other teams struggle to adjust to that. And even like teams in Spain and France and what have you, that is a schedule, that is a brutal schedule. So it'll take a while for the team to get used to that. But listen, I've total confidence in Moyes and the players, but they'll relish it. I mean, Europa League, how can you not look forward to something like that? So for sure. But what I will stress is need to bring in players for squad depth, because it's important to have squad depth for a Europa League campaign. Last season, in many ways, what made West Ham West out of Champions League is to have a thin squad. And you can't afford to have a thin squad this upcoming season, especially as you touched on being in the Europa League.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the state of the squad. Obviously, Declan Rice had a fabulous Euro 2020, but obviously quite a few other Premier League teams and others circling him. Obviously, likes of Thomas Suchek as well, still in the squad. But then Jesse Lingard, a bit of uncertainty. I believe he made some kind of cryptic statement about returning to West Ham. How has the business been for David Moyes? And is there anyone interesting on the horizon?
It's been fairly slow, in honesty. There was a bid for Sam Johnson, the West Brom ringer, a bid in the region of $6 million, which was rejected. West Brom are holding out for more. They want that roughly $12 million, which I can't see happening, bearing in mind, relegated team, 1 year left on his contract. So that one, we should see how that develops. At the present moment in time, they're still trying to close the deal on Alphonse Areola, PSG goalkeeper. He was on loan at Fulham last season. He was voted their player of the season by supporters. Really good goalkeeper, in my opinion. He kept 9 clean sheets as opposed to Fabianski, who kept 10. So that's one area the team are looking to strengthen. Listen, Fabianski has been a great goalkeeper, very dependable, but there were moments last season where he just struggled with injuries, wasn't at his best. And with Dyer Randolph being on the wrong side of 30, David Martin being on the wrong side of 30, and Nathan Trott going out on loan to Nancy, need to bring in a younger goalkeeper to challenge Fabianski, because he could have one bad game. And because the calibre of talent that is Martin and Randolph are not quite the same level as Fabianski, he's pretty much guaranteed to play the next game. So we need to bring in someone challenger for the number one jersey. And besides that, it's been fairly slow. There hasn't been any names that I've been hearing about in terms of forwards, barring Adam Holsek, the young striker at Sparta Prague, who was recommended to the club by Vladimir Safal and Thomas Solček. And just watching West Ham in the past couple of games of pre-season, that's one area we have to strengthen. I was there last night at Reading. Good 3-0 win, but you're just crying out for a forward. Every time Antonio goes down, you're sort of praying to God, like, please, make him be fine. Don't make anything happen to him. So, yeah, it's been a slow one. West Ham, they tend to do their business late in the window. But I'm just hoping this summer they'll adopt a different approach and just bring in players in, because, as we touched on, need to have squad depth, and you can't really leave it late with a Europa League campaign on the horizon.
Certainly can't. This is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to The Athletic's Roshane Thomas about the chances of West Ham repeating the heroics of last season and making some kind of campaign in the Europa League under David Moyes. Read your article today, Roshane, about the young star that Jurgen Klopp has got his eyes on, and if Jared Bowen has his way, he's going to make some pretty big strides in the competition this year. Do you expect him to stay, and what kind of threat do you seriously think he's under from Liverpool?
Well, I'll start by saying everyone calls him Jared Bowen. West Ham fans call him Arjen Bowen, obviously after Arjen Robben. You know, that's how much they love him. But yeah, we put out a piece. Well, I'll start by saying my colleague James Pearce, who covers Liverpool for The Athletic, he put out a piece yesterday on that, you know, Klopp highly rating Bowen, one of their attacking targets this summer. And obviously spoke to a few contacts at West Ham. And they said, listen, Bowen's not for sale, and the club haven't received any approaches for the winger. So it come as no surprise. West Ham fans are like, hallelujah, that's brilliant. Yes, Bowen is staying. That's really good. And yeah, he's definitely a key player for the club. Scored eight league goals last season, provided 5 assists. And in my opinion, had it not been for a loss of form around January, March time, he definitely had enough potential to make a late search for that England squad for the Euros. That's how much I believe in this guy. So I think he's going to have a great season coming up. He's been very good in pre-season so far, looking really sharp, scored 2 goals and 1 assist in the last 2 games. 24, so young. No one near his prime yet, so he's definitely someone who will feature heavily in Moyes' plan this season. And obviously, the most important part being that he's not for sale, and the club have received no approaches for him.
And mate, one of the interesting things about last season for West Ham was the fact that in the Olympic Stadium, it managed to create a void where the pressure from the fans was obviously not there, but they managed to. Unlike a lot of other teams, we look at Sheffield United, who obviously dropped after they couldn't manage to get it together without the passion of the fans behind them. How do you think the excitement and the passion of the fans is going to interpret itself at the stadium? You know, with the expectation that another successful season's on the way.
Well, the fans were back for the last home game against Southampton, and the atmosphere was incredible. It really was, you know. Obviously, before the players walk out, they walk out to forever blowing bubbles. This wasn't the same when there weren't fans there. So for that final home game, even I started singing Forever Blowing Bubbles. I had to get involved because it was just such a nice atmosphere. So it was great to see them back. And what I liked most after the match, obviously when Europa League was confirmed, Moyes and Declan Rice went around the pitch still playing Sweet Caroline. And just everyone was just enjoying the moment. David Moyes telling the fans, get your passport ready, get your vaccine, you're going on the European tour. You know, Declan Rice speaking well about the fans, Mark Noble as well. So it left a high, and obviously having the fans back for next season would be even more important because they can cheer the team on. I've seen a few people say the reason why West Ham performed well last season because fans weren't there. I strongly disagree with that, because during that 15-16 season when West Ham last qualified for Europe, obviously Europa League that season, the fans were there cheering them on week in, week out. So it's just people putting teams together. So I don't think that had any impact on the team doing well whatsoever. I just think this team is a strong togetherhood. That's what enabled them to get to Europa League. They called it the Band of Brothers, and actually wrote a piece in it around like April time on it being a Band of Brothers. They all have determination. Previously, when you think about West Ham, you think of good club, but mainly individuals. So people like a Dimitri Payet being the best player, and Mark Arnautovic being the best player. Whereas now, you've got Declan Rice, you've got Fornals, you've got Mikel Antonio, you've got Aaron Creswell. Everyone works so hard for each other. And I reference the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Prior to the match, it was confirmed Declan Rice was out of a knee injury. Now, fans are thinking, oh my goodness, Declan Rice is injured. This is terrible news. That match, the team scored within the first 10 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. During that game, Mikel Antonio goes down with a hamstring injury. Jared Bowen comes on and scores in less than 2 minutes. So this shows how much they're in it together. They have that great togetherness. If someone goes down, someone thinks, you know what, I'm going to do my best to repeat the levels of that player. So Yeah, it was a great togetherness. It really was. So that was my main takeaway from last season as well.
Couple of weeks now on from the Euros and England, you were over there, my friend, and obviously were caught up in the atmosphere. What are your reflections now, looking back a couple of weeks on that final, the good and the bad? And of course, we mentioned Declan Rice playing such a pivotal role in that England team. How thrilled were you with his performances during the tournament?
I felt like a proud uncle, Derek. Honestly, I felt like a proud uncle seeing Declan Rice doing so well, because prior to the tournament, a lot of West Ham fans were like, listen, Declan Rice is the real deal. Does it week in, week out for West Ham. He's just talented. David Moyes said, I believe around March, he's worth far more than 100 million. And people are like, Declan Rice, 100 million? Like, what on earth is David Moyes smoking? But listen, during the tournament, Declan Rice showed how good he is. He showed how good he is. Played, started every match for England. I believe it was the game against Ukraine when Declan was in a yellow card. To show how important he is, Gareth Southgate took him off. He took him off because I can't afford to have this guy miss a semi-final. So that got to show how important he is. And listen, so happy for him. In my opinion, his value's gone up. People have started to realise how talented he is. But as touching on the bad, yeah, it was terrible scenes. Seeing the fans, you know, just forced their way into the stadiums. I think I've let every part quite a few stories on just the behaviour of some of the supporters, you know, going into the disabled area, blocking disabled fans from watching the games, fans dressed up as stewards to try and get... It's just crazy. Well, my colleague Kiva, she wrote a piece on her experience as a woman and what that was like and some of the stuff she witnessed as well. I just think to myself, like, it just can do a lot better. And it's like, time and time again, this sort of stuff happens when it comes to England fans. I remember, prior to the match, I went around Leicester Square to soak in the atmosphere, and because I wanted to buy a flag. That was my thing. I need to get a flag because if England win, I'm getting drunk tonight. That was my mindset. I'm getting drunk if England win. I need my flag with me. But I could just tell how tense the atmosphere was. You know, fans were throwing alcohol in the air. You know, kids about. It just wasn't safe. So honestly, it's heartbreaking to see what happened, because you can do a lot better, and got young fans who'll be there experiencing their first tournament. They could be put off football now. Young girls could be put off on football now due to what they experienced. So, yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
No, it wasn't, mate. And there were plenty of other negative stories about the tournament. But hopefully, in the fullness of time, the investigation will be done. The right punishments will be meted out, and it'll never happen again. Mate, thank you for joining us, Roshane. We'll be keeping an eye out on West Ham this weekend, because they have got a friendly against Celtic, their second game out under their new manager, Ange Postecoglou, who you obviously know we've got a particular interest in Australia, mate. So we'll watch West Ham's progression and get you on. Hopefully early in the season when they're sitting at the pointy end of the table.
For sure. And before I go, I'd say, Derek, I'm loving the fact your last name is Dyson Power. I bet you must get a load of jokes about Dyson the Hoover. And if anyone could set you up over Hoover.
all the time. But I did get a discount in a store on a Dyson because of my surname. So
wicked. Oh, wicked. Oh, that's great, pal.
That's when he's not claiming to be a Danish or an Icelandic player or something like that. Good on you, Roshane. Thanks for joining us, mate.
No worries. Take care, guys.
Stick around after the break on Box to Box. We're going to talk more Europe, transfers, etc. on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
This is Box to Box on Nine Radio NTS News Talk Sport. Lovely talking to Roshane Thomas from The Athletic about West Ham. Plenty of West Ham supporters in Australia, that's for sure. A lot more in Europe about to come with Dino and Dell. But before we do, our friends at Chemist Warehouse, they've always got a deal, don't they? Save on sports nutrition at Chemist Warehouse. There's INC 100% WPI for just $79.99. INC 100% dynamic whey for only $54.99. INC plant protein, chocolate or vanilla, 2 kilogram variants, just $34.99. And Protein World, 1 kilogram assorted variants, now only $29.99 each. Remember, in addition to visiting your local Chemist Warehouse store, you can click and collect to save time. Order online for delivery by Australia Post and get free shipping on orders over $50. $50 or call and ask for same day home delivery. Fees and charges apply. Chemist Warehouse, great savings every single day. I didn't have my Harmony backups today. I'm just wondering, I'll put in a complaint to Actors Equity to find out what, Edge, what were you doing there, mate?
Well, we just were on the Zoom remotely in the Melbourne COVID lockdown. So I just didn't feel comfortable about this acutely very good microphone. But I just might have overwhelmed the listeners with my Harmony.
You threw me off, you see. I was expecting it, mate. I was waiting for it. It's all right. You're forgiven. Derek is here. Dino's here. Euros are done and dusted. The Premier League's only 3 weeks away. It's transfer news galore. What's happening, Derek?
Well, I think the first thing to say is with all that Olympic chat up the front of the show, that forgot to mention one team there, and you know, football could still be coming home, Rob. Team GB's women celebrating a first soccer match in 9 years, thumping Chile 2-0. I don't know if you can thump someone 2-0, but there you go. They face Japan next. Edge, you know, did you grab any of that Team GB game? And what are they facing with Japan in the next game?
Well, I did grab that quite a bit of that game because it's a bit of a unique offering, isn't it, Team Great Britain? And I'm just wondering how the Brits in the room feel about football being played as a combine. I know that the players had an extended camp to try and get to know each other, and they did look a bit rusty, but they had a lot of talent. But they haven't really, in the men or the women in football, delivered at Olympic levels. Derek, what do you think about Great Britain as a footballing concept in the Olympic Games? Do you like it or do you not like it?
Oh, yeah, Edge, I'm rather disappointed that there isn't a Great Britain men's team playing for a start. You know, I understand that we've just come off a major tournament, but they could still put together a pretty decent team of under 23s and a couple of others that were either on the fringe of Gareth's squads or even are just in the under 21. So, you know, I feel like, you know, that's a wasted opportunity. But obviously, let's get behind the women. That you know, they're a great team. You know, fueled by the best of all around the land, particularly some of the English players, to be honest. I'm a big fan of the British and Irish Lions in rugby. So yeah, I think while I'm ambivalent about England, I can certainly get behind a Team GB.
Can I tell you why I think they can win the whole lot? They can win the whole lot because, firstly, the women's field in the Olympics is 12 teams, and we don't have Germany, who were the 2016 gold medalist. We don't have France until Sweden beat the USA last night. France was the last team to beat the United States, and they hold two of the four victories over the US since the 2016 Olympics. So that's the number two and three ranked teams in the world out of the Olympics. So on the basis of those two good teams being out, and we saw Zambia making up the numbers, I think Team GB, if they get on a bit of a roll, can do okay out of this. And why wouldn't America win it? Well, we saw last night, didn't we, that shocks do happen, and Sweden got over the Yanks. But don't forget the United States went to Sydney 2000 and Rio de Janeiro 2016 as reigning world champions and didn't win gold. In 2000, the USA lost to Norway in the gold medal game on a golden goal. And 5 years ago, it didn't even win a medal, falling to Sweden, believe it or not, in a shootout in the quarterfinals. So you'd have to say Team GB are in with a chance. So Derek and Dean, get behind them.
Could be coming home. There are other games, domestic. There are European men's football games out there at the moment. Celtic got a 1-1 draw with Midtjylland in their Champions League qualifier. The Celtic team was actually quite depleted, and a lot of their fans actually thought this was a pretty good result. Midtjylland actually sometimes get to the Champions League group stages, so they're no mugs, are they, Dino? Do you think that's a promising start for Ange?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's always difficult, especially, you know, like the pre-season, it's new, it's a new coach, but look, I think the result, I think they'll be happy with that in the sense that they didn't get beat. I mean, you didn't want to lose your first competitive game, but I think I still think they'll do enough in the, you know, with a bit more training. I think it's like maybe nearly 2 weeks before they play it. We've had a week and now we've got one more week until they do play that next second game, and I think they'll go through to the next round.
Yeah, look, well, that's good optimism, Dean. I mean, look, to be honest with you, with Celtic, I think it's just about rebuilding their league form. Champions League, they're probably not capable of assaulting that competition. So, yeah, if they do go through, they'll be heartened by that. The actual champions, Rangers, will play Malmö or Helsinki in the next round. So that sounds a bit easier from that point of view. Rangers could make the group stages under Gerrard, particularly after their draw with Arsenal, a few weeks ago too. Dino, there's a lot of disruption around pre-season, and we'll talk about that more in stoppage time, but we've got Arsenal and Manchester City already had their plans disrupted. Do you think that could be a bit of a blow for those teams?
Yeah, look, I think especially with England and the international players going right to the wire and get to the final, they need that rest as well, and to get back. But they're be fair to them, they're most probably they'll be fitter than most of their teammates if they were in now, even with a week or possibly another week they've got off until they come back in. So I think they'll be pretty balanced. I think, you know, if you look at like a Declan Rice who doesn't drink alcohol, he's not going to be doing too much. He'll just be resting up, and I think they'll be all right.
Now, moving on to the transfer window, really that is the main story at this time of the year. I don't really think it's got going yet, gentlemen. I think normally you need just one piece to move a big money signing and then the wheels start turning. I think actually one of the problems is Real Madrid and Barcelona, who are frequently turning that wheel, just broke, just can't afford any players. And, I wonder who is going to make that first move. Probably the biggest transfer I've seen, I read it in the paper, nearly fell off my chair. Hennessy joins Burnley. Is there something you haven't told us, Dino?
Yeah, look, he did. Yeah, I don't know what the financial side was, but yes, he's going to Burnley, and that might just be a little opening for him to get first team football again. So, good luck to Wayne. He didn't really play in the Euros. He was always on the bench, but pretty well the same at Crystal Palace when he lost his place just after, I think, halfway through the season. So, yeah, look, I think he'll be keen to get back. And, he's still a good goalkeeper. And we'll just see and keep our fingers crossed that he gets some game time.
Derek, I've got something for you. I like the little tidbits. I know this is the Europe segment. So I just wanted to know that, did you know that Amazon Prime had secured the rights for France's Ligue 1 and are going to stream all 8 games each week in not only in France but all throughout Europe? That seems to be an interesting development for broadcasting in European football.
Yeah, well, the great unbundling is happening over there. I don't know, we've got to have about five apps over here to watch total blanket coverage of football. And if you're into your Liga around Europe, that's certainly going to be another...
€250 million each year is the rumoured return. A lot less than what they were getting last year, but at least they have something based on last year's arrangements fell over.
I reckon they'll be banking on a lot of that coming from France at that price. You know, it's not a... it's not a well-watched league, I would imagine, around Europe and, further afield even here. So, obviously, France, one of the largest economies and populations. So, they're banking on the French appetite for this particular football. Interesting times. That's good news for the French league, though, because they're struggling massively financially. So, that will be a big boost to them. Looking around some other lines, I'm never indulgent on this show, gents, around Arsenal. I probably rag on Spurs a little bit and, Mourinho. But Arsenal, their pre-season's in crisis after their US tour has fallen over because of COVID. But they've been very active in the transfer market, signing Ben White from Brighton. We've got Lokonga coming in from Anderlecht, and Nuno Tavares coming in from Porto. Dino, what does this say about where Arsenal is as a club? Are these good signings, or is this kind of sign of the times in terms of where they are as a club? They're not the big names that maybe Arsenal fans might have hoped for.
Yeah, look, I like Ben White. I mean, I think he's very much a young man that's coming into the system, and he's obviously played for England. So I think he's a decent signing. But look, I think Arsenal will go a little bit better now that they've had a year under the manager, and he will have learned a lot of lessons through that whole process. And I mean, obviously, we're going to be doing our predictions on where they finish, but I'm going to be definitely telling you that Arsenal will be higher than when they were this season.
I'm doing my homework this time. I've been a bit rough in some of these recent predictions after my sort of trailblazing start on this show. So yeah, I'm going to have to really do my homework. Another player on the cards quickly, Rob, for Arsenal apparently is Locatelli. He played brilliantly and obviously was part of that Italian squad that played so well at the Euros. I mean, surely that is just a gambit for him to get a move to Juventus, because there's no way he's going to come to Arsenal with no European football, is there?
Look, it's a pretty good argument as to why not, but wouldn't he be a player to get to Arsenal? I mean, sometimes in any sport, all it takes is one player with a big personality to change the whole dynamic of what's going on the field. And, you know, coming off that Euro win, the type of character that he is, geez, if you could get him, mate, that could be a game changer.
Yeah, oh, look, I mean, crossing all my fingers, because that would be a proper, you know, interesting in the other guys to see what they can do, but that would be a proper signing. Just wrapping it up, Rob, because I know the time is ticking away. David Alaba's moved to Real Madrid on a free transfer. He says he does not intend to replace former captain Sergio Ramos. I don't think that is true at all. I think that's a direct replacement after Ramos joined PSG in a similar arrangement. Varane, talking of Real Madrid, might be off to Manchester United. And, you know, Varane and Harry Maguire would be a pretty formidable centre-back pairing. United have courted him for some time, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes. Chelsea, you know, seem to be in the market too. More noise around Erling Braut Haaland, possibly Pogba to PSG. And just wrapping it all off, remember this story, Manchester City over an FFP. That is still going on. There is still an investigation going on, and City might be firing up the lawyers once again before to go back into court, Rob.
Always. Okay, we'll hold that thought, because we are going to continue on. We're going to go around the table and discuss what the COVID environment has done to these pre-season tours and just how it might impact the competitions as they're only around the corner for the better, we tend to think. But yeah, stick around. We'll have a chat about that next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. It's stoppage time. The fourth official has given us about 7.5 minutes to wrap up what has been a busy show. But before we get into it, is your home running out of space? Well, I tell you, every week, you know you've got to call Storage King. So if you're decluttering, you're moving, you're renovating, downsizing, and with all these lockdowns up and down most of the east coast of Australia into South Australia, if you're listening in Brisbane or Perth, you cross your fingers, you need to still create a home and office, though, as backup. Storage King has got the answer to your space solution. Stores are everywhere. As a location around the corner, they've got a crack team of storage professionals. Go to storageking.com.au and let Storage King give you back some space. All right, we've got a bit to cover in stoppage time, because there's a couple of little topics just to tidy things up that Edge has got off the leash. But Derek, you mentioned when we were talking about Arsenal's pre-season being blown up, they're not the only club who've had it disrupted. But I mean, it really, what is the merit, apart from a money-making exercise and an opportunity to do a bit of PR in other parts of the world of these matches?
Yeah, look, I'll probably throw to Dino in a sec to ask him that from the player and the manager's point of view. But obviously these pre-season tours start pretty early on in the middle of the European summer. And as you pointed out, they've come further and further far flung. And obviously the Asian tour or the American tour is now very high on the list of most Premier League and top European sides, and not just the preserve of Manchester United, who are kind of the original architects of the the money grab European tour, I suppose. I mean, on the plus side, I think it obviously gives fans an opportunity that they wouldn't normally see these players playing. And of course, you know, these clubs, some of these clubs have got huge fan bases around the world. Who would forget, of course, the famous night at the MCG with Liverpool and the 100,000 in the ground. But they can also be quite turgid affairs too. And I am a bit of a Euro snob, but, you know, I've been to a few of these games, and by about 60 minutes in, fans are turning their tickets into paper aeroplanes and throwing them onto the pitch because there's just, it's been played at pedestrian pace by a second string team most of the time.
My favourite pre-season tour story was I happened to be working in Thailand when Real Madrid came through and played the Thai national team in a pre-season friendly, and the King of Thailand was invited to attend the event. He arrived at the 73rd minute mark. The referee blew his whistle. They stopped the game and played the Thai national anthem. The teams lined up at the 73rd minute mark. They all sung the national anthem for Thailand. Everyone sat down again, and the game got underway in the second half, if you don't mind. That's how they do the pre-season tours in Thailand.
Do you know, has that sort of thing happened when you were on a pre-season tour as a player?
They're always great events. You know, you go and play a couple of games, and it's a really good bonding session. Highlights and funny moments, not so much in that regard, but I think, you know, like, especially for like Edge's business and people like who does tours, it must be unbelievably frustrating to get all your ducks in a row and then all of a sudden it gets pulled away because of this COVID virus. And it's just, really, we don't really know when this is going to change.
I've read a few stories about the probably more old school, less corporate pre-seasons. Andy Townsend, the famous Chelsea and Aston Villa player and now pundit, spoke about, you know, the players were being worried about carrying a few pounds back into training. They're all weighed and they're assessed about whether they're in shape or not. Andy Townsend and his teammates used to sit in a Ford Cortina with the windows up, the heating on full blast, with bin bags wrapped around their bodies to try and sweat out the calories from the overindulgence of the summer. So yeah, I think that's the old school European tour. Of course, the players do get a chance to go on holiday too. We've seen a lot of them head off to the Balearic Islands, and of course Harry Maguire came a cropper a few years ago, so they've even got a look after themselves then too. But look, yeah, look, there's a lot of new faces that change. You know, obviously with players going in and out. So you know, Roshane was talking about West Ham versus Reading, one of the least exciting games I could think of watching. Roshane did a great job of making that sound more exciting, and that it was. It is a great opportunity for those players to bond and get ready for the new season. And look, it's not long, is it, between the Euros and the start of the season?
Before we wrap up, you got a couple of little things you want to tidy the show up with, Edge.
I do, and I just want to really get Dean's comments, particularly about Melbourne Victory, because they were our whipping boy through the entirety of last A-League season. I feel a bit guilty that we paid out of them probably every week, Rob, but they've had a big week. Chris Economides, Robbie Cruz, yep. Jason Davidson, Josh Brolante, Matthew Sparanovic out of retirement, Jason Guerrier and Stefan Nigro. They've announced all of those players in 1 week, also to join Luc Trani, who's coming across after working with Kevin Muscat in Belgium to be one of Popovich's assistant coaches, along with former Serie A player and coaching journeyman Fabrizio Camarata. He'll be a bit of an icon on the sidelines. You know, he's coached in Italy, Russia, Oman and Albania. Are Melbourne Victory getting their shit together, Dean?
Yeah, they are. I mean, Popper was always going to go in there quite heavy-handed. You can't have a team like Melbourne Victory perform like that again. And he's brought the big guns in. Luch is a close friend of mine. I mean, even though he broke my leg, so we always have a little bit of a laugh about that. But he's very good at what he does. And I think the backroom staff will be spot on, and I think the new signings will be a breath of fresh air, as well as some of the young players that they've been bedding in the season that was. So I think it's going to be a totally different Melbourne victory, and I expect them to be certainly at the pointy end of the table.
I hope for the sake of the A-League, Dino, that is the case. I know, as Ed said, we've been paying out on them for a while now, and deservedly so. I think they've deserved to be
cracked
that they've had. But, yes, and they've hit rock bottom. So hopefully for the sake of the competition, they bounce back. All right, fellas, well, great show again. We'll wrap it up and do it all again next week. Thank you, Dino.
Thank you.
Thank you, Derek.
Thanks very much.
Michael, we got there.
Thank you, Roberto. Loved your contribution tonight on Zoom, especially when you froze.
Yeah, your favourite bit, of course. There's always a sting in the tail with you each. But anyone who's listened to the nearly 300 shows of Box to Box would certainly have expected that. Thank you, my friend. Thank you, Damo, for making sure we sound okay, and Willem for doing what you do. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.